space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Buddy, so imagine getting more than your money's worth for every single thing that you purchase, every single thing that somebody gives you that eventually becomes something you need to figure out a way to get rid of. I'm talking about old furniture, I'm talking about old TVs, I'm talking about just excess food waste or garbage of any type. It doesn't matter what it is. Imagine if everything come into your possession suddenly became a valuable resource. Imagine if you had a neighbor who had a lot of things that they always wanted to get rid of, and instead of all this stuff going to the landfill, you had a use for it. Everyone actually would eventually catch on and have a use for everything. Well, I'm here to tell you it can be done. This world that we got, the so-called crisis of environmental and energy and all this kind of stuff. I'm going to play something crazy for you first. And when you listen to this guy talk, it has to do with zero waste. And it's basically somebody trying to spend 7 days to try to, not buy anything that is going to end up being waste or whatever. Trying to find reusable. I'll just let this guy explain it to you. But when he gets done explaining that to you, and I'll play a couple other things and have a little chat with you, hope you understand what it is that I'm talking about as far as, energy and things like that. Because a lot of people out there got a lot of good ideas. They got a lot of good intentions. But for the most part, the majority of the average Joe out there doesn't have the patience or the energy or, doesn't even, necessarily care about the environment or anything that has to do with, basically recycling and that kind of stuff. But imagine if everything that came into your possession now became a valuable resource that not only would give you energy, but it would also put finances back on the table for you. So every single thing, no matter what it was, whether it's the wrapping off of your Christmas presents or plastic from containers, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is that comes into your possession, it now becomes a valuable resource that, if used properly, would put money into your bank and energy into your home. It would also take away from all the environmental issues, as far as nothing ever goes to the landfill ever again. You don't need a big old dump truck, the big old diesel engine dump truck coming around and pick up all your neighbor's trash. Nobody needs a trash truck anymore for that particular use. Now there are uses that you can repurpose that truck and equipment and stuff like that. But nonetheless, just hear me out on this crazy show today, and maybe we can get something started in this world. Because it can be done. And it would be a lot easier than most folks want to believe. So anyway, I'm going to start off with this right here.
I've always thought of myself as a responsible consumer. I bring my own bags to the grocery store, I use a reusable water bottle and coffee mug, and I recycle. And then I look at my trash can. This is all of my trash for just one single month. That is way too much. And that's just me. Globally, we produce 2.01 billion metric tons of waste annually. And the most dangerous of that waste is plastic. If current trends continue, researchers estimate that in the next 30 years, there'll be more plastic in our ocean than there are fish. Plastic that will take between 400 to 1,000 years before it decomposes. Canada and the United States are the worst and second worst contributors of solid waste per person in the world. And that's embarrassing. But what this also means is that as North Americans, this is a problem where we actually have significant control over the solution. So, I want to make a real change in my life around this issue. And to start, I'm going to try to go 1 week without contributing a single item of trash. I want to live zero waste for 7 days. On day one, I link up with my friend Levi.
Welcome, my dude!
Is that super annoying?
Levi runs a YouTube channel based around environmentalism and sustainability, and how you don't need to be a hero to make a difference. Levi is going to help me get started with my zero waste starter kit, which includes reusable cutlery, reusable straws, water bottle, travel mug, produce bags, a food container, silicone bags, and glass jars.
My recommendation is getting that kit into a bag that you bring with you everywhere. That's the first thing, is just like tricking yourself into doing it. Yes. So that you are able to be zero waste as possible. This is what people get really confused about zero waste, is they think zero waste is like zero waste. They see that video with the girl with the jar a whole year in one jar, and everybody's like, well, I can't do that. And the reality is that it's not like that. It's the striving towards a world that is without waste. Okay, so I think now we should go and sort of get a bit of a feel for the zero waste world that you're dipping your toes into. We're going to go check out a place called Nada, and it's like a grocery store that has completely done away with packaging.
Nada is Canada's first packaging-free grocery store. Here you can buy produce, frozen and refrigerated items, along with liquids, dry goods, and even cleaning supplies, all without any unnecessary waste. Nada utilizes reusable containers in their custom-designed tagging system, where it logs the weight of your jar and then deducts the weight of your jar when you pay. I found this whole process really easy and simple to navigate, and I was able to get my groceries without any waste at all. After a quick grocery haul, I say goodbye to Levi, and I start my zero waste journey on my own. We might have a problem. It's late, there's only a few stores left open, and I need toilet paper now. The only problem with that is I think they're only gonna be wrapped in plastic, so I might have to get some waste. I gotta go to the store.
I've never in my life felt so ashamed for buying toilet paper.
The next day, I try to pinpoint all of the single-use plastics that I have in my home. So much of our toiletries, office supplies, and our food packaging are all single-use items. That's why in America, it's estimated that each individual throws away roughly 1,360 pounds of trash every year. So basically, the weight of a grizzly bear in trash per person. This amount of waste is largely due to the fact that single-use items are a part of everything we do. I wanted to order something from Amazon today, and I couldn't, because I know that it's going to come with unnecessary plastic packaging or papers that are all immediately just going to go into the trash. I also went to the grocery store today to literally just pick up one thing of pasta, one single package, and every single one had plastic in the packaging. My biggest takeaway from this isn't just how much plastic we use, but how little I actually think about it. Last night, I tried to get takeout, and I ended up going hungry because not a single place offered compostable packaging at that hour. Trying to be zero waste requires more than just thinking about how much plastic we use, but actually planning for it. So, going forward, I want to be better at planning so that I'm not as inconvenienced as I have been these last couple of days. By day six, it feels like I'm starting to get the hang of things. I have a painless trip to the grocery store, and I really start to make use of my zero waste kit. I even swap out a few of my single-use household items for a compostable and reusable option. 7, I'm heading out to a local music festival to celebrate my buddy's birthday. Music festivals are typically a wasteland for plastics and trash, so my goal is to take part in all the festivities without creating any waste. My first goal is to see if I can get a beer using my reusable water bottle rather than a plastic cup.
They're doing it. That's so good.
Beer bottle in hand, the rest of the day is set up for success. The festival surprisingly does an amazing job of minimizing waste, and I'm able to utilize my zero waste kit to help me prevent producing any trash throughout the entire day. After 7 days, this has been a very eye-opening experience. Trying to live without throwing away any trash is really difficult. So difficult that I screwed up within the first 24 hours. But what's been so frustrating is realizing that the only reason this is so difficult is because we've designed nearly all of our food, shopping, and shipping purchases to incorporate large amounts of single-use plastics. And it doesn't have to be that way. Shopping at Nada really helped me see what shopping could look like if large chains had to prioritize serious reductions in waste. The challenge with trying to make broad changes like this is it feels radical, and that can make us feel uneasy, even resistant to accept it. In psychology, this is known as status quo bias, and it's useful in understanding human decision making by recognizing that we feel most comfortable when we're maintaining what's familiar. Conversely, we perceive any deviation from that familiarity as something being lost. But what do we actually lose in moving away from wrapping everything we buy in plastic? Well, a certain amount of convenience, for one, a percentage of corporate profits may decrease as packing items for shipping would take slightly longer, and I expect finding new ways to apply security tags on certain items would take some figuring out. But if you think these costs fall far short of what we lose if we continue producing trash at the rate we're going, then there's two things I'd encourage you to do. One, put together your own kit for reducing your own waste. Levi actually just put out a video where he breaks down all the items in his own kit in a lot more detail than I do in this video, so I definitely encourage you to go and check that out. And secondly, try to find people in your community who also care about this issue. See if you can get other stores around you to provide more waste-free options. Because this kind of change only seems crazy until it starts to happen, and after that, it just becomes the new status quo. Before I go, I want to say a huge thank you to Levi for helping out with this challenge, and to Nada as well for letting us film there. We posted a fair bit of behind-the-scenes content on our Instagram stories while we were filming this video, so if you're not following us there and you want to see stuff like that, then definitely check us out on Instagram. And yeah, that's it from you guys. I'll catch you in the next video. Cheers.
And so if you were actually paying attention to what that guy was talking about and what he was trying to accomplish there, hold on, just stop that right there. He wanted to try to live 7 days without generating any type of trash or anything like that. But you, as well as I, know that there are very few people in this world who's actually going to take the time to want to separate trash, even when it comes down to recycling. It's a given, you know. The majority of the people out there just don't care. They're either too lazy or don't think it's that big of a deal, and you know, it's out of sight, out of mind. Once that trash hits the door and gets out there to the curb and the trash man picks it up, it's gone. Nobody actually thinks about it until it actually has a situation to where the trash is, you know, like not being picked up, and now you got all this garbage in the neighborhood stinking up the place. But the doggone, the answer to the problem is actually in the problem itself. You know, if you want to get rid of a doggone trash, you might as well start looking at your trash that you generate as a resource instead of a problem. If you think about what actually goes in your garbage, I challenge each of you who are, you know, every day throwing away trash or stuff like that, take time at the end of a day or an end of a week and go through your trash and just look at it. And see how many of these different things in there that you think that would be a valuable resource if it was collected properly. You know, stored or whatever. Everything out there that's plastic is a petroleum product. And so that in itself right there is a valuable resource. You can turn that into fuel, quite literally. Now, not everybody wants to go through a refinery process or whatever. But when I start playing these videos about gasification and, different types of, you know, there's incineration and gasification and plasma gasification, this process right here has a lot of byproducts that can be made, including recyclables. And if it can be done on a large scale, it can be done on a small scale. Imagine a refinery for your home that could be anywhere from the size of a small car to a small outside AC unit. And this thing basically takes what you throw in the trash and turns it into an energy source that is multi-purpose. It'll generate heat, it'll generate electricity, and it will actually collect valuable recyclables from what would have otherwise been garbage. So with that said, I'm going to subscribe to this one particular channel over here, and I'll actually throw the link over there because I want to open a dialogue with these people. So it's got 72,000 subscribers, but the reason why I'm interested into this particular person or group of people is that I need to be able to talk to a lot of environmentalists. A lot of people who are seriously concerned about it but don't understand that the majority of the people out there aren't going to want to go through the effort of putting their trash out or, you know, recycling or becoming zero waste. But if these people knew that there was a way that you could actually design and engineer the perfect system that would take all the garbage from every single household, and including if you really wanted to get into the high tech portion of it, including every toilet in the house. You know, anything in that house that would normally generate waste or byproduct could now become a valuable resource. And with the proper system, everything would go through and it would be turned into energy. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It can be done. So with that said, I'm going to play, I'm going to start off with this one over here. I'm going to kind of backtrack after this whole deal. Let me start with this one right here.
Welcome. In this video, we will be investigating the use of plasma technology to eliminate garbage and convert it into useful products and energy. Oftentimes, this process is referred to as plasma gasification. The two most established methods to deal with municipal solid waste include incineration, which is essentially burning the garbage, or landfilling, which involves burying the garbage. Every year, the U.S. approximately produces 220 million metric tons of garbage. Compressed, this would be enough to fill 81,000 football stadiums 2 meters deep in garbage. That's more than 400 square kilometers, greater than half the area of the country of Singapore. However, by North American standards, that's a really, really small area. The real benefit to gasifying our garbage is the energy and materials we can reclaim from it. Consider this. 1 ton of municipal solid waste, on average, will yield 900 kilowatt hours of electricity
70 U.S. gallons of water, several pounds of metal, and approximately 320 pounds of construction aggregate.
All right, let's pause that there. So he just threw out some numbers of how much of each of different types of materials that could actually be generated from the trash. But over there in the People for People chat room, they're talking about another benefits of things that can be actually done with things that you don't want anymore. There are charity organizations out there where you can give this stuff to somebody else, not your garbage, but, you know, like appliances or whatever, clothing, things that would normally clog up landfills, and things like that. So, just in the problem, you've seen just right there, you could find a whole lot of solutions in what would have been otherwise, you know, a really big mess, so to speak. And so, this plasma gasification deal is kind of different than just an incinerator. It's not like an incinerator just burns stuff up and gets rid of it and the crud just goes up into the air. But even though they do have incinerators that, you know, are filtered out any crud that comes out of the chimney. And that's when you get into a different type of where you're using the energy that's generated by the incineration to run steam turbines and stuff like that. But plasma takes it to a whole different level because of the way that it actually breaks the material down into its molecules that can then in turn be separated and utilized. But just in reusing things like they're talking about over there in People for People chat is and if you want to get there, by the way, if you're on the Super Chat Room, you want to join in on that conversation, there's a, if you scroll down on the Super Chat Room, you'll see a People for People radio link, and you can click on there and go over there and join in on their chat as well. So, anyway, I apologize if you hear kids screaming in the background, but I can't do anything about it today. Anyway, so I'm going to get on with this deal right here, but plasma gasification is a little bit different than just regular gasification because of the way that the plasma works with everything. And there are so many different methods by which to clean exhaust up, and we'll get into that as well.
Plasma is referred to as the fourth state of matter, and over 99% of the universe is in the plasma state. So what is plasma exactly? If you were to take a gas and apply enough energy into that gas, at some point, electrons will have enough energy to leave the atoms. This is known as ionization. And if over 10% of the gas is ionized, the formation of plasma occurs. Plasma consists of a soup of active species like electrons, charged particles, free radicals, photons, and excited atoms. The presence of these particles gives plasma its very unique characteristic, high reactivity. In the case of thermal plasmas, high enthalpy is also what gives plasma its importance in industry. The overall process consists of four major steps: waste handling, plasma treatment, gas treatment, and energy generation. First step, waste handling. Here, the municipal solid waste is brought into processing facilities and is then conveyed into a shredder. The waste will be broken down to small pieces. This is done to increase the surface area to volume ratio, making heat transfer more effective. Some facilities will also choose to remove most of the metals as they have no actual caloric value. Step 2, plasma treatment. In this step, the shredded waste is conveyed to the plasma reactor, where it will be gasified by means of a thermal plasma torch. The extremely high temperature of the plasma torch causes disintegration of materials into their elemental components. Organic matter and plastic polymers will be broken into carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and other basic molecules like halogens and sulfur. Any metals, metal oxides, or glass will melt down and collect at the bottom of the reactor as slag. The syngas produced will be used to generate energy, and the slag will be collected and can be resold as construction aggregate. Before going into details about the chemistry of the process, let's take a closer look at the plasma source. A DC plasma torch is typically used in the process of waste gasification. Around 2 to 6 plasma torches are usually present in the reactor to ensure homogeneous treatment of waste. Depending on the magnitude of application, the operating power could vary between 5 kilowatts to 2500 kilowatts. A typical plasma torch incorporates the following. To aid in the breakdown of the gas into plasma, an arc igniter is coupled with the plasma torch. This high frequency and high voltage igniter is directly connected to the plasma torch, and by sparking, it produces a sufficient amount of electrons to ignite the arc discharge. After ignition of the plasma, injected process gas, usually air or oxygen, maintains and stretches the arc discharge. Also, solenoid magnetic field coils around the discharge interact with the plasma to make it rotate at about 1,000 revolutions per second. This stabilizes the arc and boosts the heat transfer between the plasma and the incoming process gas. Temperatures of the system go up to 8,000 degrees Celsius, and that's why a sufficient water cooling system is required. Now, let's take a look at the chemistry behind the formation of syngas. Due to a long residence time in the reactor and extreme temperatures, all organic waste will be broken down. Let's take a look on what actually happens on a molecular scale. Here, long chains of organic molecules will be broken down by the reactive plasma into carbon, oxygen, and atomic hydrogen. These atoms will favor the formation of carbon monoxide and diatomic hydrogen molecules, the most basic and kinetically favored compounds. This mixture is known as syngas. Step 3, gas cooling and cleaning. Syngas exits the process at around 1000 degrees Celsius, and cooling is important to stop unwanted side reactions like the production of toxic dioxins. Cleaning is essential to remove undesired chemicals that could be harmful to human health and the environment or damaging to the equipment. First, the gas is cooled down to a temperature of around 600 degrees Celsius. This is mainly done to prevent the formation of toxic dioxins. Some companies choose to recover the lost heat from gas cooling through heat exchange. Gas leaving the gasification unit usually contains suspended particles, so the next step will be to remove any suspended particles. Different companies use different methods to perform this step, and one particular method would be using a cyclone separator. In this unit, particles are removed by rotational and gravitational effects. As gas enters the cyclone separator from the top, it starts flowing in a helical pattern down the unit, then goes straight up through the center and exits at the top. Particles have a much higher momentum and thus will not be able to go through the helical path the gas takes. They will sediment at the bottom of the unit and then will be sent back to the gasifier to get reprocessed. The gas will then be further cooled, and it will pass through a series of filters to remove even finer particles. The gas is now free of particles and must undergo a chemical treatment to remove toxic substances. By passing the gas through a series of catalytic converters, any traces of nitrogen oxide will be removed. This step is then followed by a series of chemical scrubbing and stripping to remove vaporized mercury residues and acids. Now, the gas will be clean and ready to use for energy generation. Finally, energy generation. The syngas produced is fed to an internal combustion engine or a boiler to heat steam for a turbine to generate electricity. The converted energy will then be used to maintain the plasma torch, and the surplus electricity will be sold to the grid. Some industries may choose to compress the syngas and use it as an intermediate chemical in the production of methanol and other synthetic fuels.
You did happen to mention in there that the energy, the excess energy, would be sold to the grid, but a lot of power companies are getting away from that, where if you got solar panels and stuff like that, unless they got some sort of government contract to buy up you excess electricity, they don't want yours because they're trying to sell theirs. But nonetheless, using science and physics, if you actually take and think about the whole process of breaking it down and how all these different materials can be generated and guided to where you want them, then anything you put into this machine is not going to get wasted. Every single thing, including metals and glass and, you know, things that you wouldn't think about normally when you throw your trash away, it basically separates. It separates and breaks it down and moves it you know out of the system, and what you get left over is heat for boiling water or whatever, and gas to that you can use to run any type of internal combustion engine. That, then once again, people will start complaining about how, oh well, we're trying to get away from fossil fuels. Well, you don't need to get away from fossil fuels. What you need to do is understand that that exhaust itself could actually be reburned. That's what the catalytic converter does. It actually cleans your exhaust up and it reburns the wasted fuel, because that engine isn't running as efficiently as it could possibly run. The harder you run that engine, the less efficient it becomes, because of the way that they're introducing the fuel into the system. So you waste more fuel by the way that this thing is actually designed than anything else. But every single thing, if you took two different types of deals, like an incinerator and a gasification system and a plasma gasification, there's three separate things, but nonetheless, you take all these different systems and you think about them. You think about what happens when you actually burn trash. What comes out of the exhaust when you burn trash? It doesn't matter what the material is. When you burn a material, you didn't get rid of that material. All you did was change its molecular structure via, you know, the process of breaking this material down using, you know, heat or, you know, plasma technologies or whatever. And so from that point on, if you understand what the materials are that's actually coming out the exhaust, then there are things in that exhaust that are useful that can in turn be separated, stored, and so on down the line. You know, everything biological, if it's allowed to do its normal decay, is going to produce methanes, like you know, different types of other forces as well. You know, heat and methane and all of these things could actually be reused. Everything. It doesn't matter what it is. Everything's energy. And including the water. You know, we don't think about it. Whenever you throw a bottle of water, you get done drinking it, you throw that in there, there's still water left inside that bottle that you couldn't get completely out of. The water's still clinging inside there. So, and if you let it sit there long enough, you'll see a little tiny bit of water left over inside there. That's fuel. The container that you're using, the plastic container, is same thing, fuel. It doesn't matter if it's a waxy cardboard style milk carton or whatever. Every single thing that goes in your trash can be used for fuel. And those things that will not break down biologically or chemically or whatever, like metals or whatever else is left over, and glass, all of these things can be separated and sent into two separate deals and combined in for you know, recyclables and, you know, construction materials. So if you think about it logically, about every single thing that goes in your trash, there's nothing in there that's not valuable. And if you designed a system using every bit of what we know right now about gasification and plasma technology and you know, steam engines, it just goes on and on. If you actually specifically engineer a machine to take everybody's trash, you know, they're doing it on a large scale. All right, and on a large scale, they're making a lot of heat. If you listen to some of when we get farther into these podcasts right here, you'll hear some temperatures that are pretty intense. And you don't really need that large of a deal in order to just take care of trash that is in your household. So if you had a system that could break your trash down, and no matter what kind of waste it is in your house, it'll break it down, it'll put it into different molecular structures, and it'll move it to where you need it, then you turn every single thing that you throw away, you discard in any form or fashion, into a fuel source that could actually run generators and heating systems that would store power. So worst case scenario, you have this system that is only a supplement to the power. Your power goes out, you have stored energy ready to go because you've been using this system. It's been charging up all kinds of different automatic backup power supply batteries and stuff like that. Nothing, absolutely nothing at all gets wasted in this system. And it can be done. It's more than doable. We have the science and the physics to back it up. So let me keep on playing some of this here.
As you can see, there are obviously plenty of advantages to plasma gasification, considering garbage is being consumed while producing value-added products and energy. One may be asking why the technology is not as widespread as landfilling and incineration. Well, one of the reasons is that plasma gasification is a relatively new technology compared to landfilling and incineration, and it's only because of recent technological improvements in the area of plasma physics that have permitted the creation of these new types of facilities. There are other reasons, though, as to why landfilling or incineration would be chosen over plasma gasification. What a municipality will choose to control its waste ultimately depends on costs, as well as other factors that can help in determining which method to choose. Currently, in North America, developing nations, and sparsely populated countries, landfilling is by far the most common method. Constructing a facility to incinerate or gasify garbage requires a much higher initial investment than simply leasing a plot of land and digging a large hole.
Alright, so basically they're talking about how much it's actually going to cost for a community to come together and build a system, whether it be a landfill system or an incinerating system or a gasification system. And most cities or states or townships, they don't want that expense, so it's easier just to bury the trash. It's easier just to ship it off to somebody else. And that's one of the things that goes on with recycling, why places like UK and Australia and different areas around the world, either ship their trash out or bringing it in for basically recycling purposes or actually energy generation. I can't remember where the heck it is. There's a place that they're actually paying people to send their trash to them. But either way, what I'm talking about doing has nothing to do with actually going to your town council and asking them for assistance in the deal, because more than likely they're not going to do it because it costs too much. Oh, it's too complicated. And that's what most people are going to say. Oh, it's too hard. We can't do it. Well, you can do it. You can actually build these things at home if you understand the basics of what's going on there. And plasma technology is ridiculously simple. You're talking about high voltage, high frequency. It's not rocket science. Anything could be gasified, and when you see how plasma actually, how it actually works, the terminology is going to be more high-tech than the average Joe's going to understand. But nature breaks down everything. Whether it be the heat from the sun, the ultraviolet rays, or oxidization, or heat from underground, heat and pressure, even water itself will help to get rid of things. And not to mention in the environment, there are insects and things that could be biodegraded, that insects will eat old wood. They'll even eat new wood. They don't care whether it's old or new. They want to get to it. But nature breaks down everything. Doesn't matter what it is. But if we mimic nature and we use all our best science and best physics, we could actually build on a small scale units and prove these units to function to actually either completely take over the power generation for that house, or at the very least supplement the energy usage for that house. Doesn't matter one way or another. It's going to be more beneficial to you, the consumer, because of the fact if you're running on backup power that you generated, your batteries get charged. You don't obviously want to overcharge them, and so when whenever you have a full battery bank, you flip a switch and you shut yourself off from the grid and you start running on that backup power until it gets low, and then you turn it back on the grid. So during that time, you're saving money. And in the process, the byproducts that are recyclable that can come up out of there can be reused for other products, or actually taken out there and sold for, you know, premium recyclable materials. And this process that I'm talking about, it's nowhere near as hard as it sounds. It's ridiculously simple. There's a lot of videos out there on YouTube that have to do with wood gasification. Wood gasification is just one little tiny example, and it just talks about, you know, wood. But the fact of the matter is, duckweed, watermill, grass clippings, any unwanted yard waste that nature drops on the ground, or whatever that you think that's an eyesore or whatever, can also be gasified. Anything out there biological could be gasified and turned into fuel. So there's no excuse. Most generally, I don't even rake the leaves off of my yard. I don't even rake up the grass. I don't gather grass clippings. I don't live down in the city, so I don't worry about the city, my neighbor, not liking the way my yard looks until that grass biodegrades itself and basically becomes new soil. And that's what it is. Old leaves and grass clippings, they become soil, fresh dirt. It's that ridiculously simple. And nutrients for the ground. So nature's already got that part resolved. So I don't even bother with trying to rake up grass clippings. Unless now, if I want to use it for a gasification process, I could share it with the yard. Whatever I can't get raked up is going to turn into dirt. And whatever I can get raked up, I'm going to put it into this gasification system that's going to turn it into fuel and generate electricity and heat at the same exact time. So as far as ever running out of not ever having enough trash, that's not going to happen. You know, you might actually have to pull out your toolbox and take apart some old appliances or stuff like that and separate the different types of metals so you can get your, best amount of return on your investment whenever you bought this appliance and then suddenly it don't work. Either A, you could go out and buy new parts and put the thing back together and use it a little longer, or you can separate it into what can be gasified and what can't be gasified, and then take those materials to their prospective recyclers. I mean, there's people out there that, would take whatever, if it was a premium recyclable. Premium meaning you're not sending them some sloppy garbage and expecting somebody on that other side to separate it. You got a premium recyclable that is made, and it's separated by its physics and chemistry and its molecular structure into separate containers. Now it becomes premium recyclable, and it's worth something. So your trash just became not trash anymore. It actually became a resource, a valuable resource that could generate revenue for your house. So if people understood this, they wouldn't be so worried about trying to go to some crazy zero waste thing where they torment themselves trying to find things in a society that wraps everything in plastic so that it can last longer or doesn't get dirty or contaminated before it makes it to your house. And if you understand that, then when you take that out of that package and you got a general idea what each one of these packages are made out of, you can put them in their perspective deal. It could all be turned into a premium recyclable or a fuel source for a system that would actually take any waste from your house and no longer be a waste. It would become either a source of revenue or actually a source of fuel that would give you the energy needs. It would meet your energy needs. And maybe your neighbor doesn't have one of these systems. Maybe your neighbor doesn't care about it. And you say to your neighbor, hey, you want to get rid of your garbage for free? I'll take that bill off your hand. And now you got their garbage that you're using to supplement your power yet even more. You know, chances are when they get wise to what it is that you're doing, they're going to want that garbage for themselves. There come a day whenever everybody is like, hey, man, I need somebody's trash. You know, and it's happened before on a larger scale. Doggone it, I can't remember where the heck that was. That they were actually having people bring their trash to them. But either way, the science and physics is there to recycle every single thing. If you think about that Back to the Future deal where Doc Brown brings the time machine back from the future, and he starts digging in the trash, and the kids ask him what he's doing, and he's got Mr. Fusion on there, and he says he's fueling up, he don't need plutonium anymore. He's taking all the chemicals that in the makeup of this and putting it into a fusion generator that produces the 1.21 gigawatts that he needs of power. Now, science, they say life imitates art. If you pay attention to what some of these sci-fi deals, you might be surprised at what is actually possible if you really put your mind to it. So let's finish this one out.
Incineration and gasification may pay for themselves in the long run, but given potential maintenance or repair costs, landfilling is the least risky. Some of the concerns with landfilling involve...
So, they're talking about when you build these big systems, it's cheaper to have a landfill because it has less maintenance cost and so on. And so, if you design these things properly, there's going to be very little maintenance cost. And you're talking on a large scale when it comes down to talking about taking the whole city's trash to one of these facilities. And those people that own those facilities, they're going to need to make money in order to keep that facility going, to pay for employees and whatever. But if we engineer, and we have the knowledge, we have the capability, and we have the talent available amongst the Dream Team and everybody listening in to literally come together, engineer a waste disposal system that could be used on a household scale that wouldn't be so, intrusive as far as, making the whole neighborhood look ugly. I mean, look, if you go around the neighborhood and count how many central air units are in the neighborhood for each household, then it wouldn't be no different than that. And you could actually put it side by side with the central air unit and use what would have otherwise been waste from one, whether it be heating or cooling, and even water draining off from an AC unit, all these things, and you could merge these two systems together to where the one's waste energy would assist the other one in doing its job. And it's doable. It can be done. Let's keep going here.
Toxic leaching of heavy metals, such as mercury from those new CFL bulbs, or other carcinogens from the landfill into groundwater. The effects can be partially offset by using impenetrable liners. When organic matter in the garbage is buried...
So they're talking about putting a liner down underneath the dump so that things like CFL bulbs and any toxic materials, batteries... from alkaline or lithium or whatever, don't work its way down into the water table. When I suggest that you take and you recycle every bit of this thing. It doesn't matter what it is. You recycle it all. You build a system that will actually, use this. And when it comes down to things like fluorescent bulbs and batteries and stuff like that, you wouldn't throw them in the trash. Because they all have usable materials in there that could be recaptured, recycled. And so that wouldn't even be an issue as far as ground pollution like that. But if you listen to what they're talking about there, they gotta put a plastic liner down inside that dump in hopes to make sure that nothing from that dump while it's breaking down is leaching out. But if you look at this diagram in this video of what this particular dump is, they're making an attempts to save gather methane out of this, but you got a big giant resource which is now a waste product that you didn't need to begin with. That you could take that entire system and you could build a methane generation plant that would take out anything like glass or metals or anything like that, just completely separate all your trash and only put in there food waste. And then you got a methane generator. When that stuff starts to rot and it releases that gas is going to be under pressure. And it can self-pressurize containers. When those containers get to their designated pressure, you can release that gas over into smaller containers for distribution to whoever needs that gas. So we can make this thing so incredibly efficient that even if you did have a landfill, that landfill had a purpose. And its purpose was to actually generate energy from what would have otherwise been waste. Nature wastes absolutely nothing. The only people that waste things are people. That we waste a lot of stuff. But every bit of what we waste eventually works its way back into the system. It's just in the meantime, we stink up the place or dirty up the water, so to speak. And it's that ridiculously simple. So anyway, let's finish this one out. There's a little bit more left on this one.
Begins to decompose, methanogens, a type of bacteria that operate in the anaerobic environment, release methane to the atmosphere. New technologies are attempting to capture these. However, at least 70% of methane still escapes. This has resulted in landfill fires, which are a safety hazard, but also it should be noted that methane is at least 25 times more effective at trapping heat than carbon dioxide, making it a much more problematic greenhouse gas, even though plenty of the carbon remains sequestered underground in landfills. Plasma gasification ultimately burns syngas to generate energy. Syngas is simple, and the toxic emissions from burning it result in lower emissions than when garbage is burned like with incineration. Gasification is also more efficient overall than incineration and results in a higher energy yield per ton of garbage. The gasification of waste recovers other value-added substances from the garbage, which energy cannot be yielded from, such as metals and glass, and is removed as slag.
So, basically, whenever all that trash is being burned...
Plasma gasification is currently...
Pause that for a second. When all that trash is being burned, you're using heat and physics, everything for, you know, heat rises, cold air falls, or heavy objects, sink down. That's one of the methods they use to actually separate different types of metals, because each one of these metals are heavier than the other to some extent, and so they'll actually build up layers when you allow this stuff to settle out while it's in its molten form. Anyway, by understanding how this system's working, that stuff that they call in slag down there, even back, if you go all the way back to, you know, early times whenever they were forging iron for their swords or pots and pans or whatever, the method that they did that produced slag, and inside that slag is all the what they didn't want is glass and actually some bits of iron ore and stuff like that, but all of that in itself can still be used. So there's no waste in the whole entire process. It only becomes waste if you decide not to use it. And you know, if you pick up that stuff out of that slag that usually ends up down in creeks from old forges or whatever, when they're making metal, they can't use it. You know, they could use it, but why? They can get fresh materials to melt down or whatever. But either way, if you understand what that stuff is, it's a combination of different types of metals. It's gold, it's silver, it's carbon steel, it's glass. It's things that, you know, when it was in its molten state, you know, sunk down to the very bottom, or even the lighter materials that were scraped off the top of the good metal that you want because they were lighter and they floated to the top, that slag as well has valuable resources in it. So, Nothing. Nothing is worthless. It is all a valuable resource. So you just understand the makeup of it, the chemistry, the molecular structure of it, the types of materials that are left over. By studying your trash, you could actually build you a plan on how you want to get rid of this trash in the most energy efficient and the most profitable manner. And that includes actually being able to, whether you want to recover water from your trash, or you want to use that water as fuel for your trash, or if you want to use that water for a part of the system that actually helps to break down materials into different makeups or whatever. Every single thing in that trash can have a purpose. Not one single thing in that trash is not recyclable. Every single thing that you throw in the garbage is recyclable. Most people don't want to dig through a bunch of nasty old trash. And so, if you design a system that doesn't care about nasty old trash, it's going to take that nasty old trash and turn it into something that is usable, energy, heat, and recyclables. It's not going to discriminate what you put in that trash. It's going to turn it into fuel. It's going to turn it into heat. It's going to turn it into byproducts that, you know, it'll separate the water, it'll boil off the water, it'll do whatever has to be done to change that molecular structure of anything that you throw in that trash is with heat, temperature, pressure, plasma, and all the physics that we already have available. So it is more than possible. It can be done. So even biological waste, hospitals use plasma gasification to get rid of that. Let's keep moving forward.
Widely used for the destruction of biomedical waste and can also be used to concentrate radioactive waste. It works much like the waste disposal process, but since inputs tend to be much less than a municipal solid waste reactor, energy is usually not produced from the syngas or sold back to the grid. For the low-level radioactive waste, although the radioactive isotopes will never be destroyed, they will be concentrated in the slag 10 to 15 times greater than they were in the input stream, which makes long-term storage much more affordable considering the reduction in volume. The gasification process tends to make the radioactive slag chemically and mechanically very resistant, which is desirable considering it is radioactive. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are funding an interesting project, which involves a toilet that gasifies the waste inputs. It may seem strange to reinvent the toilet so late after it's been in.
You talk about Bill and Melinda Gates building this toilet. Anytime Bill and Melinda Gates gets involved, I get concerned. But nonetheless, if they're putting some resources towards making a toilet that's actually going to, you know, recycle human waste in a proper manner, then I guess that's a plus. So let me go ahead and let this guy finish this out.
Invented. But the reality of the situation is that 2.6 billion people worldwide still do not have access to safe sanitation. This results in over half of the hospital beds in developing nations being occupied by patients who are sick due to waterborne diseases from a lack of sanitation. The project is focusing on gasifying the waste using microwaves and using the syngas to power a solid oxide fuel cell. The objective of the fuel cell is to provide enough power to ignite the plasma, making the system self-sustaining. The invention of such facilities would not need to have water or sewage lines to them and could be easily installed in rural areas or urban slums. Overall, plasma gasification is a promising technology. Compared to other methods for eliminating garbage, it is much more environmentally friendly, has less emissions than other destruction methods, and yields the highest amount of energy relative to incineration. It also yields value-added products and helps to conserve the limited amount of resources remaining on the earth. The technology is constantly improving, and there are several companies, including local ones, such as Pyrogenesis and Plasco, that have successfully implemented them on an industrial scale. In the future, we should see the increasing presence of plasma gasification technologies in our lives.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to try to speed that process up. get the average Joe involved in plasma gasification, and we start building, you know, central units that people can use in their own house, you know. And as far as safety wise, if you understand the basics of it, then you ain't got no worries. If you you can't just slap a bunch of junk together, obviously, but it's not near as hard as people would like you to believe that it is. So we already played that one. Okay, let's just go ahead and start in on this one right here. Hold on, let me go this one first.
The thermochemical conversion process uses heat to break down biomass into intermediates, such as gas or bio-oil, that can be upgraded into fuel and other products. One type of thermochemical conversion process is gasification, a method that uses heat to turn biomass into a hydrogen and carbon monoxide-rich gas called synthesis gas, or syngas. This, in turn, is converted into liquid transportation fuels or other products. Gasification occurs at relatively high temperatures. Here's one example of a gasification conversion process. Wood material, such as forest residue, is a common feedstock for the gasification process. For best results, feedstock wood chips are no more than 2 inches in size and have 20% to 30% moisture content by weight, depending on the gasifier. In the gasifier, the biomass is broken down into vapors in a carefully controlled environment that typically contains oxygen and/or steam. The syngas produced is made up of carbon monoxide and hydrogen. Char, a solid byproduct of gasification, is typically removed using a cyclone. Cyclonic separation allows removal of particulates from a gas stream without a filter by using rotational effects in combination with gravity to collect the particles. Tars and methane are also produced. Their quantity and composition depend on the gasification environment. Tars are high molecular weight organic compounds. If they are not removed, these tars will contaminate downstream equipment and inhibit fuel synthesis. One way to remove methane and tars is by using special catalysts to convert the compounds into additional syngas, thus eliminating the methane and tar problem while also improving the efficiency of the process. Additional cleaning and conditioning steps may be required to remove other contaminants such as ammonia, sulfur, and carbon dioxide. The syngas is then conditioned to produce the desired ratio of carbon monoxide and hydrogen to achieve optimal chemical reactions in subsequent steps. The pressurized hot syngas is then passed over a catalyst to form a liquid. The catalyst is contained in a reactor, and the syngas is passed through the reactor, where the carbon monoxide and hydrogen molecules combine to form larger molecules. These molecules are subsequently cooled, condensed, and refined into clean, renewable transportation fuels and other products. The Department of Energy has supported development of innovative technologies that result in higher yields and superior quality of biomass syngas. These efforts have also resulted in a much more thorough understanding of the gasification process. Enabled by these advancements, industry is deploying gasification technologies that will bring clean, renewable transportation fuels and other biomass-based products to the marketplace.
All right, so I wanted you to get just a general idea of what the gasification process is or whatever. That process, explained in that particular manner, a lot of folks don't understand that gasification systems, they're in your car. They're called catalytic converters. All right, they take the exhaust that's wasted and they reburn it, and they send some of that gas back up into your intake to be reused as fuel. But majority of it gets wasted. The heat generated from a catalytic converter gets wasted. But if you understand how the catalytic converter works, go out and look at what they call the GEET system. And basically what that is that they figured out that if they put a stainless steel rod inside of the exhaust system of an internal combustion engine, that as that exhaust is coming out of that pipe, it actually causes that stainless steel rod to quite literally float inside that exhaust system. It's not blown out the back or anything. It just kind of just like floats. It finds its center in there. And that, you know, rod now inside there, whether it's stable or even spinning inside there, is getting hot. It's getting really, really hot, red hot. And while that thing is getting real hot, anything that comes in contact with that is essentially broke down instantaneously, aka plasma. So, you know, some people want to think about the GEET system as some sort of high-tech deal, but it's really not, and it is at the same time. The GEET system is basically like a catalytic converter. And it breaks down, you know, you could have a soda pop mixed in with just a tiny bit of gas and water or just garbage, just flat-out garbage. Once you get that thing up to operating temperature, it's basically doing the same process as this gasification process. It's turning it into fuel. It's breaking it down. And whatever is able to burn will burn. And whenever they do this, just like in a gasification system, you use a bubbler system in order to separate out any particulates that didn't get burned up in the process. And those particulates are basically usable again. So, by understanding just a little bit of basic science, a little bit of basic physics, and a little bit of basic mechanics, you can specifically engineer with a ridiculous amount what's the words I'm looking for? A ridiculously amount of effort using what I've been trying to explain to people for years, turn what would have otherwise been garbage into pure energy. Everything out there is energy. Doesn't matter what it is. And if you're throwing it in the trash and it's going to the landfill, whoever owns that landfill is now sitting on a gold mine, if they understand how to use it. I know of one place in this world, in my neighborhood, not too far from where I'm at anyway, about, I'd say, maybe an hour away, but they have turned their landfill into a profitable recycling plant where they go out and they get paid to take garbage away for people. The consumer pays the trash man to take it away. And then when they get it to their facilities, they turn it into fuel, electricity. They run their machineries off of your trash. They get it. And that's the dirty little secret. They don't want everybody else to get it. Because if you get it, you'll be doing it. And then they won't be able to make so much money off of it anymore. So anyway, let's go from that one there. I got one more of these that I want to try to do. This is about a Japanese deal that they've already figured out this system. Dang, did I push play? Yeah, there we go.
The Arakawa River flows from Saitama Prefecture toward Tokyo. Kawaguchi City is located on the Arakawa River near the southeastern border of Saitama Prefecture, and this convenient location to Tokyo has contributed to the development of the city as a residential area. In addition, with the promotion of many projects, industry and cultural attractions in the city have been growing. However, with an increase in population, the amount of waste generated has been increasing year by year. Kawaguchi City has addressed this problem by establishing a modern, community-friendly waste thermal treatment facility, the Asahi Clean Center. such traditional industries as foundries, tree plant nurseries, and landscaping services, and making fishing poles have made Kawaguchi a well-known city since olden times. Because of the extensive foundry industry here, Kawaguchi has been known as the City of Cupolas and has often appeared in movies introducing famous towns. As newcomers to the city increase, the traditional festivals and ceremonies flourish more and more. The first festival of the year is the Hatsu-uma Drum Festival in March. May is the season for talismans and praying for abundant crops, and a large snake is made of straw for the Jazukuri Festival. August brings the Tatara Festival, the largest festival held in the city. Then, in December, comes the Okame Festival, a year-end event much loved by the local people. In February 2003, Skip City Center was born as a new industrial and business center. This multimedia facility has brought many changes to Kawaguchi, but the old is being carefully retained in a harmonious way, attracting people to this city of tradition and advanced technology. However, even greater increases in population are forecast for Kawaguchi in the future, and the amount of waste generated will also continue to increase. Strenuous efforts are being made to cope with this situation. All residents wish to have a safe, pleasant, lively city in which to reside without damaging the natural beauty. To make this widely held desire a reality, in November 2002, the Asahi Clean Center, a new community-friendly waste thermal treatment facility, was completed. The Asahi Clean Center not only keeps the load on the environment down, but also recovers valuable resources from waste. Municipal solid waste is largely classified into four categories: paper, bottles, cans, PET containers, and similar items that can be reused; various kinds of organic waste and other unrecyclable waste; batteries, fluorescent lamps, and other hazardous wastes; and large furniture, bedding, home electric appliances, and similar items. Inside the Asahi Clean Center are located the Recycle Plaza for processing recyclable waste and the gasification and ash melting facility to dispose of household waste. This is ash that remains after household waste is incinerated at the Totsuka Clean Center and is called delivered ash. The Asahi Clean Center disposes of delivered ash. 420 tons of waste and 37 tons of delivered ash can be disposed of per day. Now, let's take a look at the gasification and ash melting facility and various other typical facilities. The waste thermal treatment facility consists of the following four major areas. First is the waste receiving and feeding facility, which receives, stores, and pulverizes waste, and feeds it with ash to the fluidized bed gasifier at a constant rate. Next, the gasification and ash melting facility. The gasifier converts waste into combustible gas, and the gas melts fly ash. Third, the heat utilization facility that recovers heat energy from flue gas, reduces emission temperature, and generates steam. Finally, the flue gas treatment facility eliminates hazardous substances from the flue gas. Now, let's look at each facility in detail. The collected waste is weighed at the weighing shed and then loaded into the waste pit from the platform. Then, waste is further lifted by a crane into a waste hopper. Waste waste in the hopper is fed into the shredder, where it is broken up into fine pieces, which are then mixed with delivered ash and fed by the waste feeder into the fluidized bed gasifier and ash melter at a constant rate. In the gasifier, the sand is fluidized in a vertically circulating motion with high temperature to decompose the organic substances contained in the waste. Waste fed into the gasifier by the waste feeder is brought into contact with the high temperature fluidized sand bed and is decomposed into gas, char, and other substances. The gasifier is kept at 550 to 600 degrees Celsius, which is low enough to prevent dioxin formation, and which is also below the melting point of ferrous and aluminum. The gasifier interior is maintained in a reductive and lean oxygen state. This makes it possible to recover ferrous and aluminum and other inert substances from the bottom of the gasifier without oxidation. The gas from the fluidized bed gasifier is led into the ash melter, where it is combusted at a low air ratio to reach temperatures as high as 1,350 degrees Celsius to melt the ash into vitreous slag. The ash melter consists of the primary chamber, inside which the ash entrained with gas is collected on the chamber wall by cyclonic motion. The inclined type chamber for collecting slag in the secondary chamber. And the ash melter also has a tertiary chamber for the complete combustion of gas. Gas whirls along the ash melter wall while burning at 1,350 degrees Celsius. Ash in the gas is melted into molten slag due to the high temperature and with the centrifugal force of swirling gas. The slag then runs down the wall of the ash melter. Molten slag is quenched by water and air through the granulation trough and the slag conveyor, and is pulverized and collected through the slag grain size controller. The recovered slag can be used as a substitute for sand as a sub-base coarse material for road construction. At the Asahi Clean Center, slag-made bricks, tiles, and interlocking blocks are used for flower beds, stairways, and sidewalks. The gas, stripped of slag, is completely combusted at 1,350 degrees Celsius. The waste heat boiler effectively recovers heat energy involved in the flue gas and utilizes the heat to generate steam. The temperature of the flue gas at the inlet of the waste heat boiler is higher than 1200 degrees Celsius. The generated steam is utilized for the center steam turbine to generate electricity. The electricity reaches a maximum of 12,000 kilowatts, enough for consumption in the entire center. Surplus electricity is sold to electric power companies. The flue gas is sent to the treatment facility for removal of pollutants. The steam is also used for water boilers to feed hot water throughout the center. The bag filter collects dust in the flue gas. The flue gas is scrubbed with a solution of caustic soda to remove sulfur oxides and hydrogen chloride. Then, the flue gas enters the catalytic reaction column where nitrogen oxides are reduced to nitrogen by ammonia. The pollutants contained in the flue gas are removed to a level below the limit specified by the emission guidelines and can be released safely into the atmosphere from a 100-meter stack. This graph shows a comparison of the emission levels of pollutants and the regulatory limits. As can be seen from the graph, the emissions controlled at the Asahi Clean Center, blue, are well below the regulatory maximum limits, red, permitted. The emissions are under the continuous watch of a flue gas monitor installed in the stack. The quality of emissions monitored is indicated on the emission quality display at the entrance of the Recycle Plaza. The representative installations of the Asahi Clean Center just mentioned are put under the control of the central control room. Signals from cameras and measuring instruments are all gathered here. Let's review the major merits and the latest technology of the Asahi Clean Center's gasification and ash melting facility. The high temperature treatment dramatically reduces dioxin. Ferrous and aluminum are recovered in a non-oxidized state suitable for reuse. By reducing air ratio, the flue gas volume is reduced to minimize environmental loads. Fly ash is melted and becomes slag by the heat energy contained in the waste. The recovered slag is used as a material for sidewalk blocks and other like products. Unsorted waste is a nuisance, but when it is sorted properly, as shown here, recycling becomes possible, and it becomes a resource. It is very important, of course, to sort waste properly, but the most important thing is to reduce the amount of waste generated as much as possible by creative thinking and effort. The daily average discharge of waste per person is about 1 kilogram. Soon, the population of Kawaguchi City will reach 500,000. This means that 500 tons of waste will be generated every day. Waste disposal is a costly business. The Kawaguchi Municipal Government is attempting to decrease the amount of waste generated by 100 grams per person per day, through the cooperation of all residents. If this can be achieved, it would result in reducing the amount of waste that must be disposed of by 18,000 tons a year. The Kawaguchi Municipal Government is striving to create a city filled with greenery and provide a pleasant living environment. If each and every citizen cooperates in reducing waste, the result will contribute significantly to the city's efforts to build a more comfortable place to live for all residents.
Yeah, the key in that whole mess was is if you could get every single citizen to cooperate and reduce the amount of waste. Well, that's the big issue right there. Yeah, just to get people to want to actually do anything about it, you get a lot of people out there that'll say, "Yeah, I'll recycle," you know, but they don't go to the full extent of it. But even a partial recycling is better than nothing, I guess. But if you could get every single person to understand that their trash could actually be beneficial to them as far as a resource, and make it as effortless as possible. I'm not trying to say that every person out there is pretty much lazy, you know, but a lot of people don't want to take the extra effort. But these different types of technology, like plasma gasification being the best one because of the way that the plasma actually breaks the materials down a lot better than, you know, if you just do regular incineration, you've got a lot of particulates that could be recaptured. So that would be the least efficient one. The next one in line would be the normal gasification, where they're just using heat and recycling the exhaust, and the best one would be the plasma gasification. But even that could be expanded on if you understood what it is that I've been trying to say. You could have this thing literally separate your trash for you using physics, and even to the extent of recycling old computer motherboards and electronics and phones and stuff like that, you can actually separate the gold. All you have to know is the thermal breakdown of any given material. You know, what temperature will this particular material burn at? Is the gold a higher melting temperature than the plastics or, you know, the materials that they use that the motherboard's actually made out of or whatever in your computer? So once you got all those things figured out, then you know how to use physics to quite literally separate them. And since gold is obviously a heavier deal, part of the slag, then, you know, when that process is going through, it'll fall to the bottom. So you're going to have the heaviest metals at the bottom, gold and lead, iron, and so on. And once they're in that state where you now have this slag that's made out of gold and iron and aluminum, there are methods by which you could actually separate those different types of metals. So you have now a valuable resource down there. And if you took it to the extremes, you'd have your gold separated, you'd have your iron separated, and you'd have your aluminum separated and all that. So you could take your old TV set, instead of throwing it into the landfill, you could either donate it to charity if it still works, or you could recycle it into usable, valuable resources. And I'm talking about doing this on an individual scale, as opposed to how you have to try to get a community to come together to build a large plant like what they're doing. And it can be done. All of it can be done. If you could get the average Joe who says they care about the environment to go through the process of separating their trash into different categories, then those premium recyclables could go to, you know, actually generating revenue for them. There would be people out there who would want to buy premium recyclables. The less they have to do to that, the more money they can make off the materials. And now they're not obviously going to give you a super high price for anything, but it's just pennies in the bucket. But even to that extent, you're not only cleaning up the environment, but you add those pennies up, and eventually they pay themselves off. They pay for themselves. Your trash would pay for itself. You wouldn't have a trash bill anymore. And with a system like the one that I'm talking about creating, and you build a outside unit that, you know, it doesn't have to look ugly. You can dress up like some old fancy car or whatever, make it look really nice. Be creative about it. And then the neighbors wouldn't be complaining. But there wouldn't be no exhaust byproducts that, you know, would be hazardous to the environment. And all the everything, using all the chemistry, it would all be recycled. Every single bit of it would be recycled. And even the exhaust off of one least efficient system would be recycled. So you could run your internal combustion engine knowing that it is, you know, only 20-30% efficient maximum. Then that exhaust coming off of there is still fuel. It's still recyclable. You could take and capture that exhaust, reburn that exhaust, use plasma gasification to break it down yet even more, and then turn around and reuse that exhaust. So you could have two or three engines running off the same doggone fuel. And all they're doing is recycling each other's exhaust until it gets down to the point where maybe the last one in line won't run, because it's not enough boost. But you could capture that exhaust from any one of these deals, and you got fuel. It's that ridiculously simple. If you go out and you look up the GEET system, that's G-E-E-T, GEET, and you see what they're doing, look up gasification, wood gasification, plasma gasification, and you put all those ideas on the table, and step back and look at the big picture, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So, generating heat, electricity, and premium recyclables in the process with usable materials, even for, like the guy was saying, building blocks to build things out of. You know, they were taking some of this material from the regular gasification and adding it to the materials that they used to pave roads. And so nothing got wasted in that process. If you mimic what nature's done, then you're going to have a clean system. We keep looking for clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, and I've been saying this all along, we have already got what we need. It's just getting people interested in taking those pieces of the puzzle and putting them together in the right configuration and actually constructing machinery that will do exactly what we're saying. That's the hard part. The hard part is getting the people to understand. And so that one link that I put in there in the super chat room to that one particular YouTube channel, I'm going to contact a whole bunch of those YouTube channels like that. People that talk about zero waste. I'm going to try to get some of these people to the table and listen to their concerns. What's the concern? You say we got this problem, this waste problem. So let's figure out a solution on how to resolve it. You know, they talk about drinking straws getting stuck in the nose of turtles. Why aren't people recycling the garbage? They would never make it to the turtle's nose. It's crazy. But that's what you deal with on a regular basis. People, they talk about a problem. They just don't want to listen to the solution. They don't want to talk about the solution. What is the solution? Well, the solution to them, make paper straws. Let me see something here. I was checking out a video about recycling. Stephen Gibbons posted in there. I thought there might have been some talking in there, so I don't know. Sorry about that. Thanks, Stephen. Anyways, cool video basically showing that, how the universe recycles everything, the world recycles everything. It's what we've been talking about forever and a day, that everything's recycled. You know, and if we take in, like I said, pay attention to what nature's done, how nature breaks things down, we know what all the problems are, and we have all the solutions to them. So anything that could be, a potential hazard, we know how to deal with it. That's including radioactive waste. I did a show here about a week or so back where I played this one right here. I'm going to go ahead and replay it. It's about 14 minutes long, but it's how plasma can fix our waste problem.
The rocket equation. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, I don't want to hear about the rocket equation, so I'm going to have to redo this here. Yeah. Doggone commercial. Sorry about that, folks. It's not very good for live TV or radio. Oh man, this is really hard to do. Trying to get everybody on the same page is a trick. Let's try this again. Do do do. I gotta scroll down on that too. Listen to that. Sorry, I'm still pushing buttons here. This is how it goes. Duct tape and bailing wire. Mad science. Come on, man, cooperate here. Jive turkey. All right, here we go.
What did I just do there? I did something that probably everyone in this room and the people watching around the world do every day. I just threw a soiled food wrapper in the garbage. Do you ever stop and think what's going to happen to that soiled food wrapper? it'll probably end up in a landfill, where none of the valuable materials in that wrapper will ever be recovered. In fact, landfilling is the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. What is the significant environmental footprint that landfilling causes? Are there other solutions? Well, plasma is one of the solutions that innovative minds have come up with to address this, but I'll come back to that in a moment. The developed world generates, on average, a half a ton per person per year of household waste. This is actually an astounding number until you think about the Canadian number, which is more than 3/4 of a ton per person per year, or 2 kilograms per day. What this represents for all of the waste in Canada in a year can generate up to 2.7 million garbage trucks full of waste every year. If we want to use another perspective, if we were to look at the Montreal skyline, we're talking about filling 98 Place Ville-Marie's full of the waste we generate as Canadians. Now, increasingly, waste is being diverted from landfill and being returned into the economy through recycling. Nonetheless, far and away, landfill is still the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. This is where my food wrapper will end up, in a landfill. Another number to ponder. Household waste only makes up 10% of all the waste we generate. Our mines, our smelters, our refineries, our manufacturers, including the ones that made that wrapper, all produce hazardous, toxic, and even biological waste that needs to be disposed of responsibly. And, unfortunately, these wastes, too, typically end up in landfills. If we want to know what a landfill looks like, I've prepared this simplified graphical representation of a landfill. With household waste, typically, biogas is emitted at the global warming potential of 28 to 36 times carbon dioxide. Normally, once a landfill is full...
All right, keep in mind, every time you hear global warming involved in this, I disagree 150,000% with global warming. Climate change, climate disruption, I am probably by far the largest, what they like to say, climate change deniers on the planet. Look, put the scams all aside, but what they put inside that deal right there, regardless of what the idiots are saying, that's a valuable resource that's being wasted. So, I don't care about the global warming. I don't care about the carbon footprint. I don't care about all that kind of stuff. What I talk about is incredible efficiency that could be achieved by, instead of throwing it in the garbage, throwing it into a machine that's going to guide all those materials to where you want them to go, as opposed to in the atmosphere. So if they really seriously care and think that global warming is a real issue, then they should be listening to what I have to say.
It'll be capped, and then those biogases will be treated, and in some cases even turned into energy. But also we have chemicals which will leach from that waste and accumulate in the bottom of the landfill in the form of what I like to call a toxic soup. Now, this toxic soup is treated properly, captured, treated, and disposed of. But in most places in the world, including in many developing countries, there is no biogas capture system, no protective liner, and certainly no treatment of that toxic soup. Climate and potable water are all negatively impacted by these practices. In fact, if you look on the OECD website, it truly sums it up. Inappropriate waste management impacts human health and the environment through soil and water contamination, air quality, climate, land use, and landscape. So, what are we to do? As a society, we must continue to practice the 3 R's. What are they? Reduce, reuse, recycle. These are important principles, and we must maintain these. But we cannot simply say that once we have done the 3 R's, that we are to simply bury the rest. This is unacceptable, and I hope that if your only takeaway today is that the status quo is not sustainable, then I've accomplished something. So Is there another way? Yes, there is. Let's talk plasma. Your high school science teachers probably taught you, that there were three states of matter. What are they? Solids, liquids, gases. Well, damn those teachers. They're wrong. There's a fourth state, and it's called plasma. What is plasma? Well, it's like a gas, but in a highly electrically charged or ionized state. The best method I could use to describe plasma is to give you some examples. The surface of the sun is in a plasma state. That lightning bolt that stretches across the sky is plasma. In fact, the northern lights are plasma as well. In fact, neon lights and even that big screen plasma TV, that's plasma as well. In fact, any element on Earth can be converted into a plasma state. In fact, 99% of the known universe is plasma. So why am I talking about plasma when I started this talk about a soiled food wrapper? It's because plasma can be used as a tool to transform this soiled food wrapper into energy and valuable construction materials. But first, how do we make plasma? Particularly as it relates to the tool for waste, there are numerous ways of creating a plasma. You could either, essentially what you're doing is you need electricity that generates an arc. You do that, you create that across a gas, and then you really transform that gas into a plasma state. You can see on the left, we can use a plasma torch. Or on the right, this is a top-down view of a furnace where we can create arcs in a furnace. Now, as it relates to waste, how this works is as follows. You take unsorted municipal solid waste or household waste, you feed it into a very hot plasma process, a plasma furnace. The intense thermal and electrical and chemical conditions, we're talking thousands of degrees, truly will break down all that waste into its elemental constituents. What am I talking about? Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and metals. No compound can really maintain itself with the intense temperatures and conditions that a plasma present. But using chemistry, and this is where I now thank my high school science teachers, Mr. Bank and Mr. Boyd, I get to recombine these elements into desired products. The gas off of a plasma process is called syngas, and that syngas can be fed to an engine to make electricity. And the glassy rock-like material that's also produced from a plasma is called a vitrified slag. This vitrified slag encapsulates all the toxic inorganic materials that appear in the waste. It is non-toxic and does not leach to the environment. As a minimum, I can take that at a 95 to 98% volume reduction and landfill it. But why would I want to do that when I can fully recycle that material and incorporate it into construction materials such as asphalt and concrete? In fact, the University of Sherbrooke have done some work where they've actually reduced the amount of cement and concrete by 30% using this material. We can rebuild our crumbling infrastructure using waste. Amazing. So with this vitrified slag and with the plasma process, to illustrate the power of plasma, we can, for example, build nearly 2,000 kilometers per year of double-lane highways using slag-enhanced concrete with all of the waste we've generated in Canada. And with that same amount of waste, we can power all of Montreal and half of the surrounding Montreal area, household power needs of Montreal and the surrounding area using plasma. In fact, you know, plasma has been used in society already. U.S. Air Force Base operated a plasma waste-to-energy system. The next generation of aircraft carriers called the Gerald Ford class will all have compact plasma waste processing systems on board. And plasma is also being used and being developed right now to rid the world of some of the most toxic materials known to man, chemical warfare agents. Plasma's small footprint actually enables mobile systems which could be moved to where these wastes are stored. And on the non-military front, plasma is being used to destroy refrigerants, which are formerly ozone-depleting substances, but used to be and still are super greenhouse gases. Did you know that an improperly recycled refrigerator can emit up to 2 tons of carbon dioxide equivalents to the atmosphere? In fact, plasma can, you know, through the destruction of these refrigerants, can actually be used to generate carbon offset credits under both the Quebec and California cap and trade regulations in compliance with the Kyoto Protocol. So, plasma looks like it's that magic bullet for my soiled food wrapper, as well as all of the chemicals and toxic waste generated in the production of that soiled food wrapper. So what's the problem? Why don't we have plasma systems or other advanced thermal processing technologies like pyrolysis or gasification all over the world? Three words. Actually, one word, one acronym, one symbol. One. All we want when we throw this soiled food wrapper into the garbage and take that garbage out to the curb is for it to be taken away. Out of sight, out of mind. Two, NIMBY, or not in my backyard. Now, nobody wants a big industrial plant in their backyard, like an incinerator or a plasma plant. I understand NIMBY. As a city councilor, a former city councilor, I experienced NIMBY firsthand, not as it relates to waste management, but to rezoning and urban planning. I get NIMBY. The problem with NIMBY is that you are making the waste. Why are you making it someone else's problem for disposal? A sustainably developed community deals with its own waste. A way is not a solution. First, you apply the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. But then you use technologies to be able to, like plasma, in order to completely recover all of the energy and materials from that waste. And these systems need to be in your backyard, not somebody else's. Here's the third barrier. In Canada, I can bury garbage in the ground for $50 a ton. Most developing countries in the world, developing countries, I just take the garbage, leave it out in the field, doesn't cost me anything. For plasma or other advanced thermal processing technologies, I need to charge a minimum of $100 or more per ton for the proper disposal of that waste. These three barriers are the reason why landfilling is still the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. So what are we to do? We know that burying garbage in the ground creates a toxic legacy for our children and our grandchildren. Greenhouse gases are being emitted, and the water table is being poisoned by these practices. This is all happening now. This is why we must act now. We have technologies in the world today to properly deal with the disposal of waste and the maximum recovery of that waste. Plasma is in fact one of those. We must let our elected officials know that the status quo is no longer tolerable. We must create a regulatory and fiscal environment whereby only ultimate waste is buried, meaning waste is buried that has been fully maximized in terms of its recovery. And we need to be prepared to pay a little more for the responsible processing of our waste.
No, we don't. We don't need to be prepared to pay a little bit more for the responsible getting rid of our waste. We need to turn around and utilize what would have been a negative and turn it into a positive. Turn your natural or your waste products that you have in your house that you throw in the garbage, need to take the system completely out of it. No trash, man, no government, no regulations, no dumb stuff altogether. Using every bit of advanced technology that's already in existence, we can literally engineer machines that even if you just want to build a simple incinerator, the equivalent of a wood-burning stove, that you could turn around and you could add a catalytic converter to that wood-burning stove that would reburn and send that smoke that would have otherwise went out of the doggone stove up into the atmosphere right back into the underneath underbelly of that stove and use that exhaust as fuel a second time around. And so by doing this, I mean, you can go out there and you can see these YouTube smokeless wood stoves or smokeless, what do they call them, rocket stoves. And you see how those things function. And the physics allows this thing where you don't even have to have a fan on the thing. It just basically causes its own draft, and it will bring those particulates back around for a second burn. And then when they go out the exhaust again, the same exact thing. It'll bring it around for a second burn. You know, there's different types of wood stoves out there that have like a double barrel on there. You know, when you bring it in, you heat it in the first one, it goes up into the second barrel, and the exhaust heat causes it to, ignite any particulates in there, and you get a second burn out of there. So there's no reason why you couldn't take that same concept and add to the system. There's so many different methods that are already available. And all you have to do is understand what's in your garbage to begin with. How do you want to get rid of it? You know, and generating high voltage is ridiculously easy. Generating plasma is just as ridiculously easy. And so you could build your own plasma gasification or plasma wood stove or plasma boiler system or plasma lighting system. It doesn't matter. You know, it's only limited by your creativity. You understand what's in your garbage. You know what recyclables are in there. Whatever isn't something that would be a premium recyclable, like bottle caps or actually plastic bottles themselves, could actually be, used in the gasification system. So whatever is the most complicated to recycle would be your fuel. And as far as the liquids that build up in the bottom of your trash can, physics tells you how to get those liquids out of things, whether it be through a dryer, evaporative system, or a compressive system where you sit there and compact your trash, squeeze all the liquids out, which run down into a tank. And those liquids, which could be a combination of biological and water, you can take that doggone liquid now, run it through the equivalence of what the GEET system is, and purify that by the time it comes out the other side. If there was any waste generated in that process, could then be recycled back in through the doggone the gasification system. So you ain't got no waste whatsoever out of this entire deal. Once you get knows what's in your trash, you could specifically design, because chances are you're gonna generate the same exact type of garbage every month after month. You're gonna become a creature of habit. You're going to buy so many cans of soda if you drink that, or so many cartons of milk, and all these different deals there every single month. It's gonna be the same thing. So you could specifically engineer a system that would treat your garbage and turn whatever's left over into premium recyclable materials, or even building materials for that matter. And it could be done on a scale that would be, no different than having a central air unit out there in your backyard. And by doing that, you could offset your electric bill or completely eliminate your electric bill by understanding that if you take that doggone heat, you can turn that heat into steam pressure that you could then in turn turn turbines to turn generator systems. So you solve two problems with one deal there. Actually, probably more than two problems. But you get rid of your trash, plus you make electricity and heat. So maybe some of you might live by yourself and don't generate that much. But either way, even on a small scale, you could build even smaller units that would at least completely dispose of it and then slowly gather up the recyclables and put them in a 50-gallon drum. And then when that 50-gallon drum finally gets full of whether it be copper or aluminum or any metals or whatever, take it to the recycler. It's like a piggy bank. You turn your trash into the equivalence of a piggy bank. And the heat and the electricity generated, you could store and utilize for hot water for your house. It can clean that water back up, because you can't destroy a water molecule no matter how hard you try. And if anybody ever tells you that, that's because they didn't, that you can, that's because they didn't listen in science. Science says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where's it go? Anyway, it's just being recycled into the system. You understand that, and you see what nature does, how nature's filtration system works, and nature's filtration system puts vital minerals and stuff back into the water, then you can do exactly the same thing. You can build systems that are so environmentally efficient that nothing you do in your house is going to cause any kind of harm to nature. And you don't have to be rich to do it. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do it. But if you bring the brilliant minds from each one of your communities together, the people that can build things, and you take these concepts and you expand upon them, you can take them to the fullest extreme and improve these systems. And then whenever your governments or your leaders complain about things, and you can show them how incredibly efficient this is. Oh, well, you didn't want to build a big plant to, take and recycle the trash. Instead, you wanted to cut corners and go pay the landfill, which you got absolutely no return on. Once it was there, it was just money thrown out the window. Now, the trash company, they knew what you was, they knew that what you was paying them to take away. You're basically taking away a valuable resource. Everything you throw in the garbage is a valuable resource. Every time you flush the toilet, it's a valuable resource. And if you understand what nature does to put it back to where nature can use it again, then you can turn around and monopolize on that. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so where does it go? Well, in this instance, it goes down the toilet, it goes into the landfill, it goes out into the ocean. It goes everywhere but where you want it. It goes down into the water table. If not guided properly to where you want it to go and turn it into a valuable resource, well, then you get what you got. You got a mess. And you got third world countries, what they like to call third world countries, which I hate that terminology because I think we all should be first world countries. And I think everybody should be able to benefit from the knowledge that we have here in the year 2019, getting ready to go in the year 2020. And you still hear about people can't even get fresh water. People can't get electricity, heating, and cooling when they need it. They can't get food. We've got every single technology necessary to resolve every single problem. Starvation, sickness, heating, cooling, energy, whatever. We keep on digging and digging and digging and pulling more resources out of the ground when we don't need to. We've already pulled enough resources to basically supply all the energy needs and food needs that we could use for the next trillion lifetimes. But for some reason, we just keep on digging it up. We keep digging more. Industry doesn't get it. If they got it, they would be saving themselves an incredible amount of money. If industry realized that their trash now became treasure, they wouldn't be wasting it. I worked for a glass company, and they wasted tons and tons and tons of glass. It had scratch on it, so it wasn't good enough. There were people out there who would have used that car windshield even though it had a scratch on it, because it wasn't cracked. They didn't mind the scratch. They can buff it out to some extent. But nonetheless, the glass company, because of their greed and stupidity, threw it in a dumpster. From the dumpster, it went straight to a waste facility, which basically got thrown in the landfill. So it was all wasted, even in the food industry. If the food industry had any common sense, when they're going to throw it in the garbage any doggone way, if they had a system outside that could turn around and basically compost that stuff or turn it into methane gases that they could then in turn run their air conditioning units and stuff like that off of, then they could even save money for just a little tiny investment. they could save a whole lot of money. They wouldn't have a stinky old dumpster out in the backyard anymore. Out in the back parking lot. But I don't understand why you can't get this through the heads of the people out there who complain the loudest. The people out there who do the majority of all the complaining are ignoring people like myself. They're ignoring science. They're ignoring physics. They're ignoring mechanics. They're ignoring every solution on the table. It's too hard. It's too complicated. It's too expensive. What's more expensive, destroying the earth that you're living on that you need to survive, or building a piece of machinery to put in every single backyard for every single household out there? Or even if it's an apartment complex, if you're a person who owns an entire apartment complex and you're dividing the electric bill up amongst all of your tenants, imagine if you had a system that would supplement that electric bill. Your tenants wouldn't have to pay near the high amount of rent, and so they'd be more than happy to assist you in this process. Separate this and separate that, and if they don't separate their deal, you charge them more at the end of the month. Because we had to pay somebody to separate it, you have to pay that person that we had to pay to separate it. So if you separate your garbage, then they have premium recyclables that they can recover their money from, which means you, the consumer, have a cheaper bill to pay at the end of the month. So by understanding this and getting industry to understand what it is I've been trying to say to everybody, nothing gets wasted. And with just a little bit of cooperation from the average Joe, if you're going to live in an apartment complex, it might as well be as inexpensive as possible with the best quality. You know, you got a swimming pool, you got air conditioning, you got heating, everything you need. You know? And it's not something that can't be done. It can be done. It's whether or not you want it to be done. If you're one of the environmentalists out there that spend your time complaining, you should be listening with all your ears and watching with your eyes on what's been said and done here. Because if we want to do this, we can implement it in such a short fashion. It wouldn't take long to build incinerators. There's probably already incinerators around the majority of a lot of these different big buildings. And hospitals already use things like plasma in order to get rid of biological waste. So you don't even have to worry about something being, infecting the less sickness, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. You know, medical waste, they got to figure out a way to get rid of it safely. And would you rather it end up in a landfill? Or would you rather it be turned back into valuable resources again? That's the question. But we have every single thing necessary to resolve all these problems. And the hardest part is to try to get people out there, people of any kind of power or any kind of platform, to listen to what you got to say. I've thrown down the gauntlet so many times and told the environmentalists, come here, sit down at the table, listen in. Let's talk about this. You say there's a problem, I'll give you the solution, and then you help me figure out how we're going to get somebody to help us implement it. I can't understand why they can waste millions of dollars on protest. People are willing to pay people to go protest, you know. And then when they go protest, they make a mess. They leave trash behind as part of their protest. There's garbage everywhere. There's homeless people out there that could actually be benefited by recycling materials and building shelters that, you know, would be compliant in any given area, that are completely self-contained, not an eyesore, safe, and use whatever waste generated in that facility to generate yet even more power. So you could give somebody a home and give them some hope and a chance to go out and get their life together and uplift communities by doing this. You could, if you took and calculated in the amount of recyclable materials that industry wastes on a daily basis, on a daily basis, not on a yearly basis, just on a daily basis alone. The resources from that trash, which should have been known as treasure, but the resources from that could have housed every single homeless person in the United States alone. And if it was done worldwide in every single country, same thing. The amount of trash that every single nation generates, and that trash isn't really trash, it's a valuable resource getting shuffled off, buried in landfills, or improperly disposed of, all of it could be turned into valuable materials and resources necessary to build temporary homeless shelters or even permanent homes for people. And you wouldn't have to keep digging it up. You're constantly out there mining the earth for every single resource you can get to turn into these same materials that you then in turn throw into the trash. Now, if you took these concepts, these ideas, these technologies, the basic science and physics and mechanics of what it is that I've been trying to explain to people, then you have the resolution. You have the solution to the problem. Majority of all wars out there are over one major thing, and that's resources. Somebody wants a gas pipeline in an area. Somebody don't want them to have it there. Somebody wants somebody else's oil. They're always constantly talking about how we're going to run out of crude oil, which is scientifically impossible. And I don't care how many people out there think that they're so educated they want to try to say that I'm wrong. We'll bring them to the table. Where are they? Bring your superior intellect and challenge Shaziz. I dare you. Let's hear it. Let's hear why it is that you say that I'm wrong. Why it is that we cannot accomplish what we're talking about. You say you want clean, renewable, alternative, sustainable. You got all these fancy little words that you use to get people elected and to get people onto your side of the deal. Well, where I come from, actions speak louder than words. It's called either put up or shut up. If you're going to complain about it, but you're not going to get up and do anything about it, then you might as well not even be protesting. You're wasting your time. You're wasting my time. You're wasting everybody's time. And if you're right and the world is doomed in 12 years, you're wasting the rest of humanity's time and the earth's time. But if you listen to some common sense, you're listening to a guy who paid attention in science class, and I paid attention. And I'm telling you, you have every single thing that you claim that you want in order to resolve all these problems. I'm going to play just the last bit of this thing. As if I remember right, he says something that triggered me.
Reduce the concept of life cycle, even to post 3R waste, reduce, reuse, recycling. Much in the way that we recycle our paper, our plastic, our cardboard, our metals, we can still give this soiled food wrapper a second life. The unrecyclable paper and plastic in this wrapper can be used to make energy. And the inorganic filling agents in this wrapper can be used to help make roads, and we can use these roads for generations upon generations. So do we really want this soiled wrapper to be sitting in the bottom of a landfill, doing nothing for us but hurting our health and our environment? I hope not. I really hope not. Thank you.
All right. So you turn that trash and you give that material a second life, and it doesn't end up in the landfill. If it doesn't end up in a landfill and there ain't no tsunami across that landfill, then it don't get washed out to sea. And if you start going to the beaches and you see people leaving behind plastic containers and you want to discourage them from doing that, you make it a $100,000 fine to even accidentally leave a plastic container laying on the beach. And I guarantee you, you will not have anyone leaving plastic containers on the beach. Not even the stupid would leave a plastic container behind because of the price being so high. You think about that. Now, right now, people can just get up out of sight, out of mind. It's, so what? I left my trash on the beach. It got washed out to sea. No biggie. You make the fine high enough and people will pay attention. And I mean ridiculously high. People complain about that. Well, what do you mean? $100,000 for leaving a plastic bottle on the beach? Yeah. Because you're not paying attention. $100,000. So, how you want to pay? Cash or credit? I'm serious. You're going to force the government on people to do things? Then might as well use the full force, right? Or maybe you start teaching people some common sense, and in order to pay their $100,000 fine for throwing, or even accidentally forgetting a piece of plastic on the beach, they get to go out there and pick up other people's accidentally left pieces of plastic off the beach. So you pay your $100,000 fine to society for leaving your trash behind accidentally. There's some trash bags over there. Start picking them up. We'll see you 7 days a week. Get down here and clean up the trash. You get enough people, including high-class people from high-class societies, realizing that they can't even leave their dog poo in the doggone public park, that they got to recycle it. That's the only way you're going to get it. When people shout loud enough because they're complaining, I got to pay $100,000 for leaving a plastic bottle on the beach, and everybody's going to be saying, well, why didn't you just throw it in the trash can? So I forgot. Well, here's your trash bag. Go clean up the beach. I don't know. You tell me a better way how to get it through people's minds that you don't want it washing out to sea. You tell me how to get it better through people's minds that when they build buildings to begin with, they need to plan, pre-plan for the future, possibilities. What happens if your septic tank begins to leak? Well, majority of that nature is going to take care of. It's not going to be a problem. But if you're anywhere near a water facility where you don't want that leaching into the water, then it's blatantly obvious, and you need to use some science and physics in order to make sure that it doesn't cause a problem down the road. And when it comes to the farming communities out there, farmers are used to using nutrients for their soil, you know, fertilizers, anhydrous ammonia, and different chemicals, and even pesticides. And if those farmers are held accountable for what they produce out of the deal, then they would be more than likely able to want to recycle their last year's fertilizer using methods that nature has already provided. Cheap methods. So, there's no excuse. You have no excuse. None of you have an excuse. Nobody in this world has an excuse. The only excuse that we keep on hearing that isn't even an excuse is you can't get everybody to cooperate. So, that's not an excuse. It's just they won't cooperate. And if everybody decided to start cooperating, well, then you might have a change of heart in the future. You might see all these things get implemented. And then in the industry community out there, somebody invented a garbage disposal. Somebody invented a trash compactor. Somebody else will take the two and merge them together. And then somebody else will come along and actually design a system that will take that that garbage disposal, trash compactor, combine them into an energy generation system for the household that they in turn will make a whole lot of money on. and you'll buy it. Guaranteed, in the future, you'll buy it. You will buy it. You'll be probably forced by the government to buy it. But the question is, who's going to be in charge from that point on? It's not going to be you. But if you take the bull by the horn, so to speak, right now, you own it. You don't need no government to tell you what you can and can't do. But by not doing anything, eventually, the system's going to figure out that they can sell you back your trash. They're going to charge you to take your trash, and then they're going to charge you to buy it back. So you paid them twice for the same stuff that was in your possession. In reality, you paid them three times. You bought it from the store, you paid them to haul it off, and you paid them to bring it back. And then the cycle repeats itself. So the system has figured out how to recycle you. It's figured out how to profit off of your trash. It's figured out how to profit off of you even breathing. And when is humanity going to finally get it? You're not going to buck the system until you leave the system. As long as you're feeding that beast, it's going to continue to charge you for everything. No matter what you do. And then when you go against the system, it's going to put you in a for-profit jail. And it's going to make more money. It's going to charge you in the courts, fines, and whatever. It's going to make more money. The system isn't broken, folks. It works for the elite perfectly. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you protest, it's going to continue to do it as long as you keep the status quo. But if you take these ideas and concepts that I throwed here on the table, and that many other have put out there on the table, you got to understand how the game of chess is played if you want to win the game of chess. Right now, the elitists, they can play chess better than you can possibly imagine. And they're mopping the people. They're taking the people to the cleaners. They're filling up their piggy banks while depleting yours. And the only ones that can resolve it is, guess what? You and me. So in your community, you find those businesses that are throwing away tons of recyclables. And if they don't want to take the time to do anything about it, then negotiate them a price to buy their trash if necessary. Look, I'll give you this amount of money for your trash, and I'll get it out of here. You don't even have to pay to have nobody. I'll come get it. And then take that trash and turn it into a profit. Schools generate tons and tons of garbage. How many schools do you have within a 20-mile range of you? How many restaurants do you have within a 20-mile range of you? If they're not willing to monopolize on what would be garbage, then you as a community monopolize on what would have otherwise been garbage. Every single thing out there, the half-eaten donut, the chicken grease, everything is a fuel source. And if utilized properly in the process of using that fuel source, it will generate yet even more resources. Doesn't matter what you do to any given substance out there, you're going to generate a byproduct. And that byproduct is another resource. Once you figure that out, you got it made. Nature wastes absolutely nothing. Nature recycles everything. You didn't destroy the water. You got the water dirty. And you can clean that water up. The science and physics are there. Water is by far the best fuel on this earth. Best fuel in the existence of time. And so with that said, I'm going to play this for you. Take a quick break, and then I shall return. You're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned.
Well, it was during the oil embargo of the United States. It alarmed me that a little country over in the Far East could actually cripple the United States. And realizing that the entire industrial base of the United States and the world is based on the supply and the utilization of energy, it became imperative that we must try to bring in an alternate fuel source and do it very quickly. Of course, I thought originally with the right type of funding, we could possibly get it in within 6 months. But reality shows that the 12 to 15 years was more correct in this projection.
Back in the 70s, Stan Meyer set out single-handedly to solve America's energy problems. He decided to do it using water, the world's most abundant storehouse of hydrogen, which is a far more powerful fuel than oil. For 15 years, Meyer has been fighting to get his inventions taken seriously.
Most inventors have to be a loner. You have to be somewhat thick-skinned and don't rely on other people to support you, because they will not. More times than not, an invention is really stolen from the inventors. Even in my prior development of high technology, I've had patents taken from me. I learned from the School of Hard Knocks to be very cautious.
Meyer has always stood out against the crowd. He has no formal qualifications as a scientist because he didn't wait to graduate from high school, leaving early to go straight into research at the high-powered Battelle Institute in his native Ohio. Now he works full-time as a private inventor. He's built a device with potentially revolutionary implications. There is nothing startling about a machine that can extract the hydrogen from water. What is highly unusual is that it should do so with ordinary tap water. The conventional method is called electrolysis. Meyer has turned that process on its head. Unlike electrolysis, his device doesn't use up large amounts of electric current, nor does it produce an enormous amount of waste heat. For 20 years, he has been refining a method to fracture water, which produces vast amounts of hydrogen on demand. This is not his latest apparatus. He was unwilling to let us point a camera at that. This is the simple device he used to convince a reluctant patent office that his revolutionary concept actually works. Alloy rods, acting as electrodes, are housed in a perspex container that's filled with water. Normal mains voltage is fed in through a transformer, but critically, there is virtually no current consumed, less than half an amp. The result is dramatic. Hydrogen pours off with the flick of a switch. Meyer claims the key is his electronics, which pulses electricity rapidly across the rods at up to 20,000 cycles per second. In a way that's not readily apparent, this process transforms the equation. Whereas in conventional electrolysis, three times as much energy is consumed as is produced in the form of hydrogen fuel, in Meyer's apparatus, the reverse is true. It appears to produce several 100% more energy than it consumes.
Stan has something that's characteristic of the people that sound like they've done something to tap zero-point energy. Has high frequency, high voltage, and there's a combination of the two at which something occurs. With Chernetsky in Russia, it was what he called a self-sustaining discharge. The tube would run by itself. When Stan gets this effect, the amount of hydrogen and oxygen that are emitted off these two electrodes is a step function. It almost boils the water. If I did this with standard electrochemicals, I need current. And the water should rise a degree every couple of seconds. with stands, it'll run for a half hour, and the water temperature hasn't changed. Something's different.
Meyer demonstrates this repeatedly without any difficulty, and yet on the face of it, it represents an extraordinary revolution. His measurements over the years suggest 1,700% greater efficiency than conventional electrolysis. And if he's to be believed, he's getting much better results from his latest, still secret invention.
Well, I first got involved with Stan Meyer when I went over there with a couple of colleagues to look at his water-splitting device. And so we arrived at Stanley Meyer. He had a demonstration cell. We filled it with tap water. In fact, I did that myself. And he switched it on. And almost instantly, the three jaws dropped because of the rate at which the gas poured off. It was quite spectacular.
Whatever energy source Stan Meyer had tapped, it was not explicable by the electric power that was going into it. So something was powering it outside of conventional wisdom.
There is no question that the gas coming off in such abundance is hydrogen. Meyer ignites it to produce a high-temperature flame able to cut through metal.
Stanley Meyer has faced a lot of difficulties. He's three times tried to launch the device and produce press conferences at the technical press round, but he's been almost universally slated. In the early days, very much so, they just ridiculed the whole idea. He's getting a little more notice now because some scientists are getting interested. But by and large, science is very intolerant, particularly modern science.
As with Tesla, Griggs and others, Meyer's claims are so far outside the received scientific wisdom that they've been ignored by the majority of the scientific establishment. But then, Meyer has ignored them too. He has poured his energies over the last 10 years into establishing recognition for his claims by getting international patents.
In the processing, there was a great deal of difficulty in trying to process the legal paperwork in such a way as to allow the patent office to fully understand what was actually occurring. In one instant, we brought the water fuel cell to Washington, D.C., and of course I had tweaked it in such a way to produce an enormous amount of hydrogen oxygen gas, and the patent examiner said, no, it will not work based on the electrolysis process. And when we turned it on and produced an enormous amount of hydrogen gas, the examiner finally realized that we were doing exactly that, and went out in the hallway and started screaming and hollering to everybody on the floor, put out all your cigarettes, hydrogen's in the building. So we started laughing and said, well, we certainly convinced everybody in the patent office that we can do what we said we can do.
Even so, the U.S. Patent Office dragged their feet for 3 years before granting patents on the hydrogen-producing device. Since then, against massive resistance, he's managed to get patents established throughout Europe and Japan. But the hydrogen machine was only the first step towards Meyer's ultimate dream. If he gets it right, this application of his technology would change the 21st century in the same way that the Wright brothers and Carl Benz transformed the 20th. He is currently modifying a beach buggy to run on nothing but water. It doesn't have a petrol tank or even a hydrogen container. It has just a tank of water. He's invented a device called a water splitter to replace the spark plug. As the water is injected into the engine, Meyer claims it's fractured into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burned as fuel. Meyer is working on a kit to modify any engine. He hopes to demonstrate it on this car within 12 months.
And of course, the blessing to the use of the water as a fuel source, that on combustion, the byproduct is water mist. So we're even solving the environmental pollution problem at the same time that we're using water to maintain the industrial basis of the world.
Meyer is protective about his inventions to the point of self-confessed paranoia. Most observers describe him as a crank and his car as an aberration. But then madness and genius often go hand in hand. Meyer shares with many inventors a problem that goes well beyond paranoia. As an engineer with no scientific background, he faces a giant hurdle when he tries to communicate with scientists.
One problem is that the language that people use when they're trying to describe their inventions is not the language that I as a scientist am used to, and so I have to translate it, if you like, into a way that I can begin to understand what they're trying to say. it might as well be written in Swahili for all of the sense that it initially makes. And so I'm not particularly inspired to put a lot more effort in the hope that the Pearl of Wisdom will reveal itself to me.
So there you go, right from the mouth of an idiot. You wanna get something unaccomplished? Go try to talk to a mainstream scientist. Mainstream scientists have become worthless. And I'll say it again, worthless. Worthless. They ain't got no common sense. Just because they don't understand it, they can't test it, they won't take it any farther, and that's one of the hindrances to, and that's the reason why mad science exists. As far as I'm concerned, Stan Myers did better not going to college. Not having a doggone degree in things. And every single researcher out there that I know who is better than every single researcher that is supposedly these scientists out there, every single one of them have a common denominator. They weren't indoctrinated by a college. And when they were told in science class that certain things happen when you do certain things, and they actually tested it and realized that, yeah, when you do certain things, these things happen, they used those physics to their advantage. And they invented things. And if they were so stupid, then why is it that every time they invented something, companies and corporations and governments would come out there and steal their design? And patent offices would drag their feet for 3 years, like the man said. So the last guy you heard speaking on their supposed science guy is basically complicit in theft of intellectual property and basically complicit in destruction of the planet. That this so-called scientist, you know, they say, oh, the majority of the scientists agree on climate change. That's a lie. It's a bold-faced lie. And to that group of scientists, which has become some sort of religious cult, a mad scientist is a heretic to that religious cult. Because I practice real science. I study, I observe, I repeat, I test. And I try it before I deny it. But all these other so-called scientists out there, these people, when they want to try to get something on the table, think that they have to go to these turkeys in order to try to get their approval. We don't need their approval. The majority of all the mainstream scientists out here in this world are educated idiots. They're ignorant to reality. They constantly promote their doctrine of repeat and repeat. They can quote theory, but they can't quote fact. They have absolutely no facts to base any of their theories on, and yet they call them the laws of physics. Well, I studied the laws of physics. And I understand the laws of physics. And I understand that the laws of physics don't have to be a blockade to getting what it is that everybody says they want. You use the laws of physics to your advantage. You use chemistry and mechanics and science to your advantage. Then that's where the real creativity comes alive. If you're willing to allow a guy like the one that sat there and said that stuff there to determine the history of mankind, then, my friend, you are part of the problem. If you allow governments to regulate you into oblivion without trying to do anything to resolve it for yourself, then you, my friend, are part of the problem. You want to get this situated, you want to get things done, then it's time for the people to come together. It's time for us to take advantage of this technology while we have access to the knowledge and are capable of communicating each other these ideas. Because the harder we work towards trying to fix the system, the harder the system puts the boot down on the necks of the people and oppresses the masses. If you want to beat them at their own game, you're going to have to know how to play the game. And how to play the game is not to play the game the way that they deem the game should be played. You find those brilliant minds in your community, then you create your dream team. And you get those brilliant minds to be loyal to one another and come together and put their egos aside for the better of everybody and start building these devices and implementing them, the governments won't have any choice but to follow. When their wallets start getting thinner, they're going to fight. They're going to fight tooth and nail. They're going to try to do every single dirty trick under the sun to regulate you and to try to discourage you. My friends, if you can't find free energy, you simply have not been paying attention. You throw it in the trash every single day. When you go outside with your umbrella, you deflect it off your head every single time it rains. You go to the swimming pool, you're playing in it. You go to the dump, you're standing on it. Every single thing out there is energy. And when you understand that nature recycles every single thing that there is, and you mimic what nature has done in its all glory and perfection, the most incredible creation in the history of time, a completely self-contained biosphere of epic proportions, everything that man does is insignificant in the grand scheme of things. If man is to ever excel, then man has to understand that man is a cog in that machine that makes everything work properly in order to live comfortably. If you work in harmony with nature, nature will work in harmony with you in return. You won't be standing in the dump. You won't be choking on exhaust fumes. You won't be listening to the idiots out there protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying, "Save the trees." You won't be listening to the doomsdayers. What you will be doing is become... you'll actually step into the realm of higher enlightenment. And become all that we were meant to be. There isn't nothing out there that we could not achieve if we chose to do it together. People have overcome so many different adversities when they came together. If you're worried about the environment, if you're tired of wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famine and pestilence and all the craziness that we have to contend with on a regular basis, and that the news media likes to bombard us to keep our spirits beaten into the dirt, and that the government wants to lie and propagandize us to cause us to have to pay more taxes to a system that simply does not work. It works for them. It does not work for you. What have we got for all the billions of dollars that we supposedly sent to the doggone United Nations Climate Change Fund? What have they given us in return for our labor, our efforts, their supposed representation? What have they done for the people? Well, I submit to you, absolutely nothing. They have not solved homelessness. They have not solved sickness. They have not solved starvation. And they're allowing your brothers and sisters on a regular basis to continue to suffer in misery and pain. We know how to be healthy. We know what the cures are. We know how to generate energy needed to keep us warm when it's cold, and cool when it's hot. We have all the physics, we have all the science, we have mad science. If you want to be a mad scientist, it's really super simple. I challenge any of you who haven't done it yet to go to the Super Chat room. Scroll down right up underneath the banners and all that and find the button that says attend the University of Mad Science. And become a mad scientist. Take the test, pass the test, print it out, put it on your wall, print it on a t-shirt, and wear it around proudly. When somebody asks you what's it all about, bring them here. Bring them to People for People Radio Network. Bring them to Shaziz Radio Network. Bring them to the people who have the answers, who have done the time and the research. You got any questions? Jump in there and ask Stephen Gibbons. If he can't find it for you, he knows who can. He's got a button underneath the University of Mad Science that says Stephen's Resource Page. Check it out. Tons and tons and tons of links to information that he has put together for you. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. If you like this show, pass it on. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour. I'm going to go ahead and get up out of here and play a song or two, depending on how much time I got. But think about what I said. Find those environmentalists out there complaining the loudest and send them to me so we can have a chat. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden mole boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life.
sidle up and spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.